Hello, and welcome to Movie Geek and Proud. This is Sean, and I'm here with a special guest.
It's me, Rachel.
Hi, Rachel.
I'm here.
So, we were getting ready to watch this movie. I won't say fabulous or terrible. I'll just say this movie.
Yes.
Bill and Ted Face the Music.
Indeed.
And we watched Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, and Rachel was like, maybe we should do an episode on this. And I was like, you're brilliant, brilliant, brilliant.
I'm a brilliant person. Because, you know, a lot of movies haven't been coming out over the past few months. Mm-hmm. So to have a fresh movie and one that has such a great history to it, mm-hmm. I think is a fun thing to discuss.
I agree. So before we get into our episode, Rachel, what's your history with the Bill and Ted saga?
It is a deep history of so much knowledge and experience. Up until about a week ago, I thought I had seen the first two movies, which it turns out I have not. Hadn't seen any of them, it turns out. So I saw the second one first, and then I saw the first one all in this past week, and then I saw the third one today. I thought I had seen them because I've seen so much of Bill and Ted in popular culture.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's my excuse, is from things like The Animaniacs. Like, that's why I knew about the whole death and the playing the games. And I thought I knew that maybe from it, but I didn't. I just knew it from Animaniacs. And then also things like at Universal Studios, how they had, like, the Bill and Ted show and stuff. So I already felt like I knew these characters, but I really just got to know them this past week.
You bringing up the show at Universal is a dagger to my heart.
It is a dagger to my heart, too. Like, that was my favorite thing. And I had no experience at the movies, I guess. But I loved that show.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it so much. And I even had a near miss with it later. Did I tell you that? So it got canceled here in LA because they're like, ugh, things are offensive, blah. And I have feelings about that. So they canceled it here, and it was canceled here for a couple of years. And then I was over in Florida with my British friends in September. And it was the time of year where they literally just started the Halloween things. And so we went to the Disney Halloween party, which was one of the best nights of my life. But they also then had the horror nights going at Universal Studios, but my friends are scared of those things and refuse to go with me, and the Bill and Ted show was still playing there. All I want is to go see this show, and it's going to cost money, but I don't want to go alone. So, my heart broke a second time.
Oh, no. So, for me, growing up, I grew up with Bill and Ted. I owned both these movies on VHS. I watched them millions upon thousands of times. I know numbers. Uh-huh. And I've just always loved these two stupid movies that are stupid. They're stupid.
They're so stupid.
But they're stupid in such a brilliant way.
Yes.
So I thought we'd give a little recap of the first two movies and kind of talk about how we feel about them. And then we'll get more into the third one.
Yeah.
All right.
I agree to this plan. Did you think I was going to? No!
No!
I object! Stop the recording! I don't want to do it anymore!
No, a thought crossed my mind and I had to like process it real quick, and that's why I stopped. And I've made good decisions, and let's keep going.
All right, I'm really glad that you are on board with your decisions.
So in the first Bill and Ted, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, Bill and Ted find that if they don't pass this class, their history class, they're going to have to go to a military school. So, and that will ruin their plans to reunite the world in the future. So Rufus goes back in time and gives them the time machine and says, have fun, which of course the time machine is a phone booth.
Yes.
So they go through time and they collect crazy characters like Napoleon. Yeah, and Joan of Arc and all these characters, all these kooky characters. Beethoven.
Oh, I love Beethoven. And Socrates.
Socrates.
Such a good guy.
And then they give their presentation in front of the school with all these historical figures. Abe Lincoln, we forgot to say.
Yeah, he was there.
And they pass their history test.
Yes.
And then Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey happens where the anomalies comes back in time to kill Bill and Ted with the evil robot S's, which mm-hmm. is also where I get my wonderful line, I've got a full-on robot chubby.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, about that. So Denomalies, the evil robots kill Bill and Ted. They go to hell where they meet the gift to all mankind,
Death.
Played by William Sadler.
Oh, so good.
So good. They beat Death at games many times, and he has to bring them back to life, where they're able to defeat Denomalies and play their song that unites mankind.
Yes.
Or so we thought.
Or so we thought.
Dot, dot, dot.
Come the year 2020, where the world is burning.
Oh, no, I know, literally.
And it turns out they haven't yet figured out the song.
They haven't.
And it's now. They have to figure that out now.
So, and then I wanted to say, all my life, I have loved Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey more than Excellent Adventure.
I agree. Of course, I watched the second one first and then the first one. They were both great, wonderful fun, but I thought the second one had some extra elements to it that were just so much fun. I mean, Death.
Yeah.
Made it amazing. It was so good. And I just don't know what it was about that one, but I feel like it was more fun than the first.
So I have some bad news for you, Rachel.
Are we in the minority?
Much like most of our life, like Charlie's Angel, Full Throttle. Yeah.
No, you're lying.
I have evidence.
These people are wrong.
So here's on Rotten Tomatoes, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure is at an 80%.
Uh-huh.
Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey is at a 55%.
Maybe they just saw the Animaniacs episode and got it confused, like me.
Maybe. Oh, and on that too, I forgot to say, you made me think of this. Bill and Ted had a cartoon.
Oh, I noticed that in quick scrolling while I was trying to figure out the ages of the princesses because I had some feelings about ageism in Hollywood.
We'll get to that.
Yes, we will.
And then just to give you a sneak preview, Bill and Ted Face the Music is at an 81%, so just 1% over the original.
Wow, and it was enjoyable. Like, it's everything you needed a Bill and Ted movie to be. And you guys, the second one is so much better. Who are you? Who are you that is not voting it up? It's so good. Death. So,
Death.
He's not in the first one. And so what's the point?
What's the point? So here's what I was processing earlier, when to introduce this. So I think I'll start it now before we get into our review. So I put together a list of five what I call dumb duos that we've seen throughout history. And I figured that what we would do is we would discuss them as we go through our review. We'll bring up one after the other and rank them. Ooh. So how do they compare to Bill and Ted, and how do they compare to each other?
Mm.
So the first one I'll throw out there to you, you're not going to recognize by name.
Oh.
But I'll try it anyway by name first.
Do it.
So Jesse and Chester, how do they rank to Bill and Ted?
Jesse and Chester. Like, I have a weird pulling at my soul, but I don't know.
They're from Dude, Where's My Car?
Okay. Which, strangely enough, I was just talking about that movie last night with friends at an online happy hour through Zoom. and then we were talking about that a lot. So that movie, I feel like I really liked then. I don't know if I would like it as much if I rewatched it now.
Okay.
And I don't feel like the main characters were as lovable. They were great, but there's something about Bill and Ted that's so genuine, and their stupidity comes from just them being them and not them being high all the time, which I feel like the Dude, Where's My Car stupidity comes from the fact that they are just high all the time.
Okay.
Which, there's nothing wrong with being high, but I don't know, it's just a little bit different. That's the characters.
Okay, I could see that. I agree, Jesse and Chester, they're very great for their movie, and their movie is strangely good in its own dumb way, but not in the same way Bill and Ted is. So I would agree that I wouldn't put them above Bill and Ted.
Yeah, I wouldn't want a second one or a third one. That's fine. Leave the car where it is. I don't need to find it.
You found the car, get over it.
They're just going to continue losing random items.
Right.
Like, maybe they'll get their female lovers, and like one of them will be like, dude, where's my girlfriend?
Dude, where's my Switch? I need to check in on my animals.
My island hasn't been weeded in months. Yeah.
So, do you want to take us through a quick recap of the third movie, and then we'll start talking about it?
Quick recap, yes. So, we are opening up in San Dimas, California, which just always makes me laugh because that's like in our backyard and it is the most unextraordinary place, except for the fact that it does have raging waters.
Yeah.
Which I appreciated as a child, appreciate less as an adult because water parks give me willies sometimes. But it opens at the wedding of Deacon, Ted's younger brother, to Missy, who has married everyone. And I thought it was just such a wonderful use of her silly character from the first two. And I appreciate that she was in all of them.
Yeah.
That it was the same actress. That made me happy because there's so many other actor changes going on. So she's now marrying the son. And they're like, we're going to make the song. Here's our song to unite the world. And it's just another failure. They haven't yet written the song. And the father is losing patience. The wives are losing patience. They go to couples therapy and together, all of them. And
yeah,
the therapist?
As couples.
As couples.
Yeah.
Two couples in therapy. And the therapist was great. I adore her. I know I've seen her in a bunch of things recently. I can't think of the actress's name right now, but I think she's always does that great awkward humor that makes my heart sing. I like a little bit of awkwardness, make me feel uncomfortable, and I'll have fun with it.
I'll totally find her name for you, dude.
Thank you. But so then they like basically are like, we have to figure out how to unite the world because we also need to save our marriage. If we don't do this, the princesses are totally going to leave us, dude. And so they basically have Rufus's daughter appear to them and be like, you guys have to do this now. Now is the day that it happens. You have to save the world. And so they start kind of traveling to their futures to meet their future selves, trying to find that song, the song that unites the world. And there's many fun things happening as they meet their future selves, who are always awful people, it seems like. My favorite incarnation of them being the one where they are setting up in David Grohl's.
Yeah.
Dave Grohl's.
And they're strangely
house.
British.
And they're weirdly British, and they have the most ridiculous outfits on, and that's going to be Sean's Halloween costume.
Wow.
I've decided it. And then meanwhile, their daughters are like, we need to help them. And so they start going through time to find some of the best musical minds to bring together to create the band that will create the song with them.
Mm-hmm. And I found the doctor's name. It is Jillian Bell.
She's so good, you guys. I love her. But yeah, she's a pleasure to watch be awkward at times and then also have her brain meltdown as she tries to figure out what's going on in time travel. So, meanwhile, in the future, they're like, you know what? If there's no Bill and Ted, that can also just save things. I don't know how this logic works out, but that's what they think in the future. So they send a robot back in time to kill them. And this robot, you guys, is so wonderful. He starts like accidentally killing people he shouldn't, and his reactions each time, I was broken. He was so funny.
He has a name, Rachel. It's Dennis Caleb McCoy.
Dennis Caleb McCoy. And then after he does all these awkward killings of people, he becomes like just very like, I want to please people, and can I be your backup dancer? And I am Dennis. I am Dennis Caleb McCoy. That's my full name. And he's hilarious, and people die. They get to go to hell again. We get to see death again. We get to bring them back. And then they all come together at this magical time where they create the song. And you know what? It wasn't Bill and Ted. It was their daughters that made it happen, which I definitely didn't turn to Sean and ask about
halfway.
They're the ones that are going to do it, right?
Wow, Rachel. That was a most excellent retelling.
It was most heinous.
So we get Keanu Reeves and Alex Winter back as Bill and Ted, which we've all been waiting so long for, and I think I had given up hope on.
Yeah. And I feel like for a long time there was the idea that Keanu might have thought it was beneath him. I think that was like a rumor that was going around. But at the same time, Alex Winter, although he doesn't act, is out there doing really well for himself, like doing directing and producing of things. So it's like, does he have a motivation either? Mm-hmm. But like with the whole nostalgia train that we're on, you know, like bringing back Ghostbusters and bringing back She-Ra, making everything that we loved new again, they're like, all right, let's do it.
It's time.
It's time, dude.
Then we also got Kristen Schaal, who you mentioned is Kelly, who is Rufus's daughter, who, of course, Rufus was George Carlin.
Yes, who has passed away, but was great in the first two movies.
And I love that they gave him his hologram, you know, moment to as a reference. That was
great. Sweet.
And we had the great Samara Weaving as Thea, who is very confusingly Bill's daughter.
You guys... I didn't understand at first because we just rewatched these first two movies. And at the end of the second one, they come back with baby boys on them and are like, this is Bill Jr. and this is Ted Jr. And they have them named after themselves. And then we meet now their girls, which I love that they kind of did a switch there and brought some feminine energy into it. But then it blew... Like, I started confusing who Bill and Ted were, which one was which, because they reversed the names of the daughters. So, Thea is Bill's daughter, and Billy is Ted's daughter, and that took me a little while. I was a little confused.
And they did actually, I noticed, fix it, because when we watched Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, I had already watched Face the Music. Mm-hmm. So they say, this is little Bill and this is little Ted. And then in this new one, they say,
Remember when you called them
little Bill and little Ted?
Yeah. So he did fix that, like, their names were what they were, but they were still switched. Yeah.
So, and Billy is played by Bridget Lundy Payne, who I will point out now is... They consider themselves a they, so we will do our best to refer to them as a they and maybe talk about that later.
Yeah.
We had William Sadler's Death. He's back.
You guys, I love him as Death so much. I feel like everything that I've seen him in my lifetime prior to watching Bill and Ted 2, he always kind of plays a villainous, like... gross guy. And so him as Death, where I just adore him and I want to give him cuddles, is really fun. And I love that like is one of his earlier ish roles in his career. So then from there on to just be like cast as the bad guy all the time.
We need an asshole. Call William.
So it's a pleasure seeing him back as Death.
We had Hal Landon Jr. back as Chief Logan, who he's also been in all three movies now.
Yeah.
Amy Stosh, you mentioned Missy, has been in all the movies. Kid Cudi as Kid Cudi.
Because why not, you guys? Yeah. Why not? He's really smart. He knows so much about time travel and quantum physics. He really brought everything together.
We had Holland Taylor, who's that woman we've all seen in everything but don't know anything she's from, as the great leader. You can just call her the leader, though.
The leader.
And then I saved this one for last. Well, sorry. We have Dave Grohl as himself.
Well, important.
And I saved this one as a transition for you. We had Jemma Mays as Joanna.
Yes. You guys. So in every single movie, there's been different princesses. They're like constantly recasting these gals. And one of the things that I found a little bit frustrating is how much younger they went with the princesses. Age-wise, because were Jemma and who was the other, and the other princess, were they in the original movie, they would have been 13 and 10 years old, respectively. So they definitely went a lot younger with the princesses. And that's just something you see that happens in Hollywood a lot and really frustrates me because it's like there's tons of actresses out there that are the accurate ages, same ages as Keanu and Alex, but they went like 10 years younger with them suddenly out of the blue, which just, when you think about the fact that they were teenagers when we first met them, because obviously Keanu and Alex were a little bit older playing teenagers, because mm-hmm. that's what you do. So it just meant, yeah, it was a huge age gap. And I'm like, why? Why do we always have to bring in these sweet young things?
Yeah, and Elizabeth was played by Erin Hayes, just to circle back on that. And you're right, we do see this a lot in Hollywood. The first time it was brought up to my attention was an article about King of Queens mm-hmm. with Leah Remini set apart from this very not so, you know, attractive man when she's a very attractive woman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then we see it, we were talking about with like Fred Flintstone with Mind Going Blank.
Fred and Wilma.
Fred and Wilma.
And even like Barney and
Betty. Yeah, we see this trend where the men don't have to do so much to make themselves look good.
Homer and Marge. Better be in shape. And I know Marge isn't the most beautiful with her gigantic blue hair, but when you look at her in the younger ones, even like when they first get together in their flashback, she has this like long, flowing, beautiful, hippie blue hair and is all lithe and lovely. And then he's still like overweight.
Yeah.
And, like, and it's not to say that you don't have people that are different that get together, but what I find a lot of times is that sometimes these characters are like lazy and, I don't know. It's like they don't have to work as hard
to get the
amazing person.
In the article I read, it said it sets up this expectation in women that, yeah, my husband doesn't have to do stuff, but I need to work out. I need to be in shape. I need to keep the house. And it's a very unfair representation of what life is going to be in a lot of cases.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's, and being a woman, it's not my favorite.
Yeah.
It's not my favorite thing.
On a lighter note, let's talk about your favorite. Dennis Caleb McCoy, played by Anthony Carrigan, we know best as Zaz in Gotham, I have had a crush on him since Gotham. He's so cute and he's so funny. And I love that he's so open with his alopecia. Like, he doesn't let it hold him back.
Mm-hmm. So and that's why he is like mm-hmm. bald, and of course he's like uber done up in makeup in this, so you can't really see all that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he was so much fun, you guys. I was full on broken in one of the moments where after he lasered some people, his reaction was like, oh no, oh no, oh no. And I was just dying. I couldn't breathe. It was so good. I really enjoyed the robot character.
Yeah.
He was fun.
And he fits right in with all these other kooky characters that they've set up throughout these movies.
He does. He does. Mm-hmm. It's like he was there the whole time as mm-hmm. part of this franchise.
So one thing I noticed about mostly the first and the third one that I wanted to bring up, which I think is almost smarter than the movies in a way, uh-huh. is the way they present time travel. I don't see this a lot, but if you notice, time still flows in their original time. Mm-hmm. So like in the first one, they have a set amount of hours that they have to come back to San Dimas and give their report. And this one the same, they have to play the song at a certain time, mm-hmm. but they can't just go back earlier because they were already there, maybe?
Or yeah.
Or because time's still flowing?
And I will say, time travel always makes my head explode.
Yeah.
Always, always. But they definitely deal with it in a really fun way in this. And I loved they didn't use it so much in this one, but I think in both the first and second one, they started playing around with that whole thing of like, oh, well, we just have to do this in the future, and then this thing will be here waiting for us. Oh, yeah, here it is.
Yep.
Like, oh, I set up a trap above your head. Oh, I set up a key in the thing.
But you forgot. If we already won, we went back and already changed your gun.
So, yeah. And in the first one, they did that with hiding the keys. Yeah. And they're like, oh, I'll put the key. So it was me who stole the keys after all. And then, yeah, it was just really enjoyable. I liked those kind of things where you're having to go less with them, like following them in to do the things, but they're just like, just remember to do this in the future. As long as we remember to do this in the future, it's going to be ready for us now.
Yeah, it definitely simplifies it, makes it fun. It's easy to understand. Mm-hmm. I really liked how in this one, I considered it both a reboot and a sequel, because I love the fact that we get to follow Bill and Ted on another crazy adventure. But we see their daughters basically go through the first two movies, if you think about it.
Yeah. Yeah, they're having their adventure as well. And it's really, one of the things that's funny about the daughters is I feel like they're characters of them rather than characters of what, like, young girls now would be.
Yeah.
I think that's one thing I would be a little bit more interested to see is, like, rather than just making them have the absolute personalities of Bill and Ted, having them be, like, you know, Gen Zers of now. Like, you don't see as many, like, surfer, dude, yeah, Gen Zers. So it would have been interesting to see some more of those stereotypes pulled out. Mm-hmm. But they're in their 20s and they're living back home because that's what life is right now.
As I was watching, I've watched this two times now, once with Rachel, once without her, and it really hit me that we've taken this movie, these two movies from the late 80s, early 90s, because I think the second one came out in 91, which were very, especially for that time, we had a lot of very male-centric movies, mm-hmm. a lot of very, let's just say it, white movies.
Yep.
They managed to take something from that time, and in my opinion, you can tell me I'm wrong, but I'll fight you on it, they effortlessly brought in not only black culture by having them go back and get Jimi Hendrix.
I was going to say, I noticed a lot of the musical figures mm-hmm. that they brought in were people of color.
Yeah.
They brought in four black people, because Kid Cudi as well. They brought in an Asian flautist. Mm-hmm. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, they brought that in, and they brought, like you said earlier, they brought the feminine to it.
Yes.
So judging from the reactions that people are getting, I would say that they were successful in making an enjoyable movie and bringing in new elements.
Yeah, whereas if you look at like the reboot of Ghostbusters, that had huge backlash. Like people hated that. And I thought it actually was decent. Like, it's not going to replace the original one, but I had good fun with that movie. And yeah, Chris Hemsworth being sexy. I can't believe you're
admitting that.
I know. I'm admitting it. I had a fun time. But I really
liked it too.
But yeah, people, like, it really made them upset. And I feel like one of the things that they did that made this more successful is that Bill and Ted were still there.
Yeah,
being Bill and Ted. Honestly, if they hadn't have kept in their storyline, even though their storyline was them like failing at every turn, and if they had just focused on the daughter's adventure through time, I don't think it would have seen the same positive response.
I agree.
I feel like you would have seen more angry people.
I almost wonder if in like the writing process, if there was two different stories and they were able to combine them to make the one.
Maybe. All I know is I watch something like this, and I am hopeful that when Hocus Pocus 2 finally happens, that it will be decent. I'm nervous about that one.
Yeah, I know. We need the original actresses back.
We do.
I think then it will be good.
We do. We need you, Bette. We need you, Sarah.
So
we need you, Kathy.
You bring up an interesting question I want to bring out of you anyway, but
bring it out of me.
So this movie was successful because of Bill and Ted. So, I foresee, since it is so successful, we're going to get another one.
Mm-hmm.
Would another one be successful if we do carry on with just the daughters?
Ooh. Honestly, I feel like you would still need Bill and Ted in some way, but maybe they won't need as big of a storyline.
Okay.
And maybe people will be okay with it. That's now that fair. They've kind of been introduced to the new characters and had their fix of their nostalgia. But I definitely, whereas I feel like Ghostbusters now, like, abandoned the women and are like, let's bring Paul Rudd in, because that's always going to be a good idea.
Stop touching yourself.
You guys, Paul Rudd, certified young person. He is the sexiest. But yeah, they just like kind of abandoned ship on the female thing. But in this new one, they are also focusing on like when the daughter, like, I think it's going to be Egon's daughter.
Yeah.
And things like that. So, yeah, it's interesting. Mm-hmm. I think they could feasibly go into a next movie and focus it just on the girls and be okay. But I still think you would have at least cameos, like really some sort of small roles by Alex and Keanu. Now that we know that they're up to do it and not snobby about it. They're into it, you guys.
One thing that I was really thankful for with this movie, and I'm going to compare it to Star Wars.
Ooh.
I read an article, and it kind of made me realize this, but they were talking about how they love the sequels, but it does tarnish the originals a little bit, because they're like, now whenever I watch Return of the Jedi, Luke, Han, and Leia blow up the Death Star, and they no longer live happily ever after for me, because now I know that Han and Leia go through marital problems, and they have a baby who kills Han.
But that's more accurate to life.
I know.
Like, there is always something after the happily ever after. Into the Woods taught me this.
Yep.
You know what? Everything's happy, and in the next scene, you might be crushed by a giant.
And that was my argument, is these people are fighting a war. Did you really expect them just to go live happily ever after?
It's like when the one, oh, the really dark one came out that was like a side story.
Rogue One?
When Rogue One came out, and it went back for multiple rewrites because it was too dark. And I'm like, it's a war movie. It's a war movie about a group of people that you all know is going to die a fiery death.
Yeah, they already said in the movies that they died getting the information. So we knew. We knew it was coming. We know
where this is going. How is this not going to be dark? I feel like just lean into that darkness. Lean into it, Disney. You can do it.
But I appreciate how in this one, even though Bill and Ted aren't our ultimate saviors, they still had a part in it. It's still their daughters. They get to see their daughters save reality, but they took part in it by going to the other realities and sharing music. So it was a family effort.
Family effort. And I love how, like, gracefully they accepted that.
Yeah.
I feel like some people would not accept that sort of, wait, what? No, I've believed for years that I should be the savior. So for them to just be like,
oh,
yeah, our daughters are awesome. This is totally heinous. Let's do this.
Speaking of heinous, I have most heinously forgot to bring up
our game. Dumb duo. We have a game. It's happening.
All right. Our next dumb duo.
Dumb duo, dumb duo.
Is Jay and Silent Bob.
Oh, I love them. You guys. I have a weird crush on Kevin Smith. I don't know why.
I think you do, because he's nerdtastic.
He's nerdtastic, and once when I was at a recording of the Hollywood Babylon podcast, my brother had sent in an email prior saying, we're going to be at the show, and my sister is obsessed with Kevin. Can Kevin talk to her? But of course, the thing that happened right prior to this was somehow they were talking about poop.
Oh.
So then when he, like, did his, like, call out to talk to me, he was talking all about, like, poop and butts. And I'm like, this is not what I dreamed it to be.
Oh, no.
But yeah, he totally called me out because that's how awesome I am and how connected we are.
Wow.
But yeah, I love Kevin Smith. And so Jay and Silent Bob, I adore them. I love, like, I've enjoyed all their movies. I've enjoyed the sequels to things. And they've also just, like, come into other Kevin Smith movies as well, just as parts in it. And I think they're great. They also are ones that are getting high all the time, and that's part of why they're stupid, but I adore them.
So I guess this question goes without saying. Would you put them above Jesse and Chester?
Yes.
Would you put them above Bill and Ted?
Ooh, I have a longer history with them, and I'm desperately in love with Kevin Smith. Oh, that's a hard... I can't decide. I need to ruminate on it. Can they hang out side by side right now? Can they all hold hands next to each other?
I'll give you another one now, since I forgot for a while to give you any new ones.
All right, let's do this.
Okay, this one may be a little easier. I guess I didn't realize how much you love Kevin Smith.
I really love Myth. So I thought
this was going to be lower down on your list. I'm trying to go in, like, ascending order.
Oh, made a mistake.
So how about Harry and Lloyd from Dumb and Dumber?
Hate them, hate them. I hate them.
You hate them.
Okay. I love Jim Carrey, but for some reason, Jeff Daniels makes me really uncomfortable. Like, I have a thing with Jeffs in Hollywood. I don't know why. Jeff Daniels, Jeff Goldblum, Jeff, the other guy from Tron. They all make me uncomfortable for reasons.
Okay.
But so their movies are okay, but they were never my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really just, I love, they're just dumb because they're so dumb. They're so dumb. They're the stupidest. And I enjoy their things, but they definitely rank lower for me because I just have never enjoyed
them. Do they rank lower than Jesse and Chester?
No. Okay. They're above Jesse and Chester for me.
Okay. I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Because you're right. I went back and watched Dumb and Dumber, and it was still a funny movie. And then Dumb and Dumberer and Dumb and Dumbest.
How do they go? Dumberer. And then there's like a prequel.
Yeah.
With different actors.
The prequel is terrible, and the sequel is even more terribler.
Yeah. I do like the part with like the parakeet.
Yeah.
The dead parakeet that always made me laugh.
Okay, so we're doing okay.
Yeah, we're
kind of on the same page, except for we still have some...
Except for I'm really in love with Kevin Smith, and that trumps many things.
I just realized, damn, we're going to have to bring up one of my childhood movies, so go against one of your childhood movies,
later. Oh, no.
These last two, I think, are going to be more difficult.
This is exciting.
It is exciting, isn't it?
Ooh.
So I wanted to bring up something we noticed on Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, two things.
Yes.
Number one, I've talked about this, I think, before on the show, but back in the day, there's a movie called My Boyfriend's Back.
My boyfriend's back and you're gonna be... He was a zombie. I remember that movie.
And he would eat people.
Yeah, but he was doing it for true love,
for
you
true
guys.
Love.
He wanted to be with her, and so he was eating people so that he could be with her, because true love.
So I remember my mom and I were watching it on TV and we died because in the movie, he's in the library and he sees this very large woman and he gets very hungry to eat her. And unfortunately, in the credits, it puts her as chubby girl in library.
Oh, yes. Okay, yeah. Yeah.
Or it might have been chunky girl, chubby or chunky.
Same, but something rude.
Same slap in the face.
Like, it couldn't just be woman in library.
Right.
No, we have to point out the fact that she was large.
So in Bogus Journey, when we were watching it, two of the credits were stupid seance member and ugly seance member.
And honestly, if I were just looking at the people and their characters and how they were acting, no seance member was acting more stupid than anyone else. And then... No one was particularly sticking out to me as ugly.
Yeah, no, I can't tell you which of the two people would have been ugly seance member.
No, I would definitely have to like look at the pictures of the actors to know which one was which, because neither of those descriptors are accurate to the characters. And then there's one seance member 1, 2, and 3 or something like that, and then stupid and ugly. And why? Why didn't you just number them all? Why are we calling some of them out as with these weird qualifiers? I don't understand. I feel like it's rude. I feel like it's very rude.
Yeah. And another thing I noticed that was in the special features is we were watching a featurette where Alex and Keanu were talking about the making, and then they were talking about how in the movie Bill and Ted had to face their fears. And then Alex Winter said something about how they're going into some L. Ron Hubbard stuff. And if this was Scientology, they would have charged $10,000 for this.
Cults.
Right. This was in 1990 that this movie was made. It came out in 91. And he's talking about Scientology. Mm-hmm. And I went on this whole, like, exploration of, was he part of Scientology?
Oh.
I couldn't find anything. But... I bring this up to say, listen to Once Upon a Cult every Monday.
Do it. It's really fun, you guys.
And you can hear Rachel on it, too,
I'm on a couple episodes. And I'm a Patreon. Join me. Yay! In Patreon supporting Once Upon a Cult.
I'll give you your $5 later.
Awesome. As long as I can get the episode of You High off your ass. That
yeah, you'll get that. That's coming soon for Patreon members. All right, so let's go ahead and get into our last two dumb duos, and then we'll rate a movie.
All right.
All right. So next up, I have Romy and Michelle.
All right. So I know you love this movie, and I've only seen it once in my life, a long time ago, and I hardly remember anything about it. I know there are Post-its, and I know there's a dance scene. They invented Post-its, and I know they do a wicked-ass dance scene.
They do.
But are they really stupid in it?
I would say they are.
Okay. I can't remember. It's been a while. I know that they're desperate to be liked and by their high school reunion people.
They definitely, to me, resemble Bill and Ted in that they have their own kind of language and the way they say things, and they do everything almost like... They do stupid plans to try to get popular, like, I invented Post-its. Yeah. And then Victoria and I, my buddy on Once Upon a Cult, we used to always use a line from the movie and say, when we worked together, we would say, do you want to go out for a businesswoman special? Which was just lunch. They just go out lunch. To a bar or a cafe and they're like, do you have a businesswoman special? Yeah, because we're businesswomen and we want the special for businesswomen.
I haven't watched that movie in a long time, and I don't have a deep love of it, but I think I like that we got some women that are allowed to be ditzy and fun and engaging, and I love that they do a dance number together. I think that's great.
Me too.
So they're definitely going to rank above Dude, Where's My Car? And above Dumb and Dumber for me.
Okay. I actually already placed them without you saying that. Oh. And I agree. I put them above Harry and Lloyd.
Awesome.
Here's our last one, and then we'll have to place Jay and Silent Bob.
Okay.
Wayne and Garth.
Oh, Wayne and Garth. Okay. Okay. So it's also been a long time since I've seen these, but I feel like I do have a deeper history of them when I was younger.
Yeah.
I watched the movies a lot
when I was with them.
Younger. And like Bohemian Rhapsody, you guys, and Foxy Lady. and I always remember the bad guy, the fact that he had to get like a cavity search.
Oh, on the side of
the road. I don't know why that is so vivid in my mind. It's just like the cop like snapping the glove.
Yeah. And then he walks all funny the next scene.
So like they are so much like Bill and Ted.
Yeah.
Because they also have that love of music and like yeah, rocking out and this is my voice now. This is how I talk. Honestly, so I feel like I would put them above Romeo and Michelle. But for me, I don't know why I like Bill and Ted so much now. I just discovered them, but now I adore them. Well, because also, I mean, I didn't just discover them. Yeah. I have the deep love of them from the Hollywood Horror Nights because that was one of my favorite things there. Mm-hmm. I think for me, my ranking would probably go Jay and Silent Bob, Bill and Ted, Garth and Wayne and Garth, Romeo and Michelle, Harry, another Lloyd. Dude, and then Dude, Jesse Where's My Chester. Car? That's probably my ranking.
So, yeah, I think my only one that I disagree with you on is I'd probably put Jay and Silent Bob after Wayne and Garth because I have such a rich history with them.
Makes sense.
So, should we just agree to put them in the middle after Bill and Ted, but before Wayne and Garth?
Sure. Okay. We're promoting Bill and Ted just so that we can connect.
Yeah. Well, because for me, I didn't love the Jay and Silent Bob standalone movie, and I haven't seen the sequel yet. I've pledged to watch it someday, but I do really enjoy them as a duo in their other movies, and I love that, like, Silent Bob, Kevin Smith, like, he didn't talk because he was so nervous, but then when you see him in real life, like, he won't shut up.
Exuberant and, then, yeah. and, like, all the talking. He has, like, multiple podcasts yeah. because he really enjoys talking, and he's fun to listen to.
And it's funny because in the movies, Jay won't shut up, but in real life, he's the more quiet one.
mm-hmm. Was it in... Maybe you didn't see the animated series. Like, was there an animated series of Clerks or something?
Yeah.
Where they, like, were laying out this plan with all these blueprints, and it's like, Jay's gonna come in from the ceiling.
oh, yeah.
it's so amazing. and they're climbing up the wall. And I really like that.
all right, great. So I feel good about... Bill and Ted Face the Music. I think
I feel
we did
so
it justice.
Good about it. You guys go watch it. Have fun with it. It's just meant to be so much fun. And I really, like, I enjoyed the effects. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel like they were anything extra special. But even, like, when they're playing the music and, like, the swishy lights are coming out on them, it looks kind of like the swishy lights that they used back in the day. And I liked it. Mm-hmm. It was really great fun. And I feel like... Universal, when we all gather in 2021 for Horror Nights, I feel like it might be worth your time to consider bringing back a certain show.
A certain yeah? show that was always very full, unlike your current show, Jabberwocky, which people were walking out of.
And I love myself a good dance crew. I do. I will watch all those dance crew shows, watch them compete, but... I want Bill and Ted. I want them. I want them to sexy dance and be offensive. And I want it. I want that back in my life. And also, if you want to bring back that Spider-Man show, that was really cool, too.
Yeah. And the Beetlejuice review.
Shebang. Shebang. and let, you know what? Let's go back to the first thing that awakened my sexuality, the Conan, the Barbarian show.
Anyway.
But no, for real. There was a sexy girl chained up on the top of a mountain, and I think that's, like, where my desire to be tied up came from.
Okay. Just well, now so you I know that about you.
Yeah, yeah, you know
you
that
You want
now.
Kevin Smith to tie you up and defecate on your chest?
Maybe not the last part.
Okay.
But up
not
until
on
then.
On your chest.
No, on my face.
Okay.
Definitely.
So every movie review, we score the movie on a scale of 1 through 5. 5 being the best, and we look at rewatchability, entertainment value, would you recommend this? And we always choose something from the movie to rate it by. So what should we choose to rate this by?
I feel like, my goodness, like, I wanted to just be like, heinouses or something. Like, they didn't say heinous enough in this one. They said heinous so much in the first two.
They did.
And then there was things about, like, double negative heinouses and triple negative heinouses.
Non-heinous.
Yeah.
I got it. Let's rate it by Dennis Caleb McCoy.
oh, no. oh, no.
How many Dennis Caleb McCoys would you give it?
Honestly, I would probably give this a 4 or 4.5.
Okay.
Because I really loved it. I thought it was great fun. I'd watch it again. It made me happy.
Yeah. For me, taking a childhood movie duo and bringing it up into the 21st century, are we in 21st century?
Yeah.
And making it so entertaining and making it even more relevant today, I'm going to give it 5 out of 5.
Woo!
Yeah. Dennis Caleb McCoy's.
Oh, yeah.
I really love this movie. I already want to watch it again, even though we literally just watched it.
You just watched it and you watched it before that. Mm-hmm. But it's a good thing you paid that $5 extra so you can own it.
I know. Yeah. That's so, what I wanted to bring up. You can either rent it for $20 or buy it for $25 through Amazon Prime right now.
Brand new, fresh movie. You don't have to travel to San Diego to see it or Las Vegas to see it. You can just... get it on your TV, and it's a good old time.
Well, Rachel, I am very happy that you joined me for this episode.
Yes, thank you for inviting me.
Where can the people find you?
So you can find me a couple places. You can find me at on a podcast called A Real Bodice Ripper, which is a podcast that rips apart the romance novel genre. And we have some fun Halloween things that'll be coming up soon. And it's just really great. You can find us on basically every streaming service. Spotify is big for it. And then you can also find me on Facebook at Radiant Dance with Rachel. I teach Zumba. So if you ever want to dance and it's Halloween, I don't know if you know that it's Halloween, but right now it's Halloween. it's happening. So there is some really awesome songs that we're dancing to. So come dance with me.
And as someone who does not read the romance novels as you go through them, I very much enjoy listening to you and your partner in crime, Jesse, go through them. I think you're both very fun and you bring up very relevant things. Oh, yeah.
I have so many great quotes of knowledge of things that I've learned.
I just can't remember what I learned. So, and you can also find me, of course, with Rob on Brunch with the Hollowells. You can find me with Victoria on Once Upon a Cult, or you can find me on Etsy at Magic Havoc. And thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.